Hey, welcome back to another week of Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. I'm Lauren Fox.
And I'm Andrew Hansen.
And last week, we did not record a show.
And now we're in here early. This is Tuesday.
Right. This is weird. So we're
might be a first ever.
I know. We're going to be talking about things on Saturday, but Saturday isn't tomorrow. Saturday's a few days away. But the pleasure that I got Friday and Sunday was driving to Hoboken and back, which I don't recommend doing ever to anybody. If there's any way that you can humanly avoid it, I thought...
Especially in the summertime.
Oh, I thought we were in good shape leaving here at 10 a.m. and, you know, mapped it out using the app that everybody tends to use now, Waze, where you can allegedly outsmart traffic together. There was no outsmarting of anything. I was with everybody else, the sweaty masses in their cars, driving down there. And Waze was really of no help at all. The original estimate that I got was 4.5 hours. Do you care to take the over or the under on that?
I'll take the over.
Okay, that was a good move. We stopped because, I mean, we don't have these up here. And if we did, I'm actually just really glad we don't. We don't have Sonics up here.
No, we don't.
So stopped in Connecticut at about the 2 hour mark for Sonic because I wanted some corn dogs.
Thought we were about halfway.
But it's like some kind of bizarre property of sitting in traffic or driving. For every minute that you sit is two additional minutes on your trip.
And seriously, that's risky.
I mean, really. And so we stopped at the Sonic for half an hour, and by doing so basically added an hour and a half to our trip.
Well, we'll never know, but could have.
No, but I'm willing to bet. I mean, the 2:30 got us into Secaucus because we weren't in Hoboken proper. We were in Secaucus at 4:15, by which point we're all hungry and sweaty and just I don't know. I just need not to sit around. And, of course, it was a baseball tournament, so, and you'll find this out soon enough, what do you do when your kids are at a tournament? Go to the pool, which, so the hotel in Secaucus had, these aren't features, these are bugs. They had a pool that was an indoor pool, so it's a nice dry area inside the hotel. You had about 30 people in the pool, as well as swim classes taking place in the pool. Now, my other question is, you've had your kids in swim classes. Would you in your right mind bring your kids to a pool where you knew there were going to be like 30 other members of the general public just cruising around?
No.
Like, how can you do anything? And alternatively, or at the same time, these kids are singing things like Mary Had a Little Lamb while they're swimming or Ring Around the Rosie. And then just for like the cherry on top of this amazing scene, there was a piano. I mean, like, this is the kind of stuff that makes you wonder, like, did I actually die, and am I having like my kind of in between experience? Because in addition to this pool room that's like 150% humidity and 40 kids in it and swim lessons and singing, somebody has stuck a piano right outside the pool room where a couple of kids are sitting there and just banging on the keys. I'm like, dude, I don't know what to do to fix this. So yeah. Now that I describe it, I wonder why I sat in there for as long. I sat in there for all of like 5 minutes. Yeah. And
at that point, you're probably anxious for the first pitch.
I was anxious for the first pitch. I guess fortunately, I'd already eaten an empanada from a gas station to satisfy some of my hunger. And yeah. And then basically, I think I was asleep by about 8:15, woke up the next morning. It was a girls baseball tournament down in Hoboken, which was the birthplace of baseball, and the Hoboken Historical Society hosted a barbecue to go along with it. I mean, it was a nice event. You had, I'm going to guess somewhere in the neighborhood of 150 girls, 180 girls, maybe, down there playing baseball. You had a lady there by the name of Maria Pepe, who I'm guessing is in her late 50s now, who, back in the 70s played in 3 Little League games for the Hoboken Little League team, and some parents complained, which, you know, the story goes to kind of show you, like, sometimes you feel like maybe things really haven't changed, and sometimes you go, wow, things have really changed. And some parents complained about a girl playing in Little League, and ultimately her coach was, hey, this player's on the team, and these parents complained that that she couldn't play, and Little League sided with the parents who thought that there shouldn't be a girl in Little League. And ultimately, they ran it through the court system, and Little League was forced to allow girls to play baseball. Now, where the story sort of changes is, this is 45 years ago, give or take, after the decision was rendered, the accommodation the Little League made was, hey, girls can play baseball, but oh yeah, by the way, we're going to create this softball thing for girls. And I'm not saying by any way that softball is a bad thing. It's anything that gets somebody off the couch playing a sport is a good thing. But to come up with the thesis that softball and baseball are the same game, if you were to go watch a girls' softball game, first of all, softball and baseball aren't, because anybody who's stopped by Chubbuck Field on a Sunday night knows that that somewhat resembles baseball.
All right.
I don't know what it resembles. But so slow pitch softball obviously is its own thing. But fast pitch softball and baseball, aside from the fact that you're wearing a glove and swinging a bat, are really different games.
You have four bases and a fence, but yeah, you have different dimensions.
Different dimensions.
Different size baseball.
Different
and
strategy, different roles, different size ball, different, I mean, many things vary, and to a point that people will say to me, oh yeah, hey, you know baseball, you must be able to coach softball too. I don't, and I've done it. And the things that are obvious to a lot of people who have been around the game for a long time, as far as the varying distances between home plate and the pitcher's area, there are many differences between those games, and particularly as girls get a little bit older.
And oh, by the way, in baseball, you can pitch overhand.
Yep.
In softball, you pitch underhand.
Yep.
That's sort of a big deal.
It's certainly a difference. So to make a long story, I guess, even longer. So Maria Pepe out in Hoboken, still lives in Hoboken. She did not benefit from that legal decision that allowed girls to play, because by the time the decision came down from the high court,
she was probably in college.
She was too old. I think she was 14, but it's interesting. And of course, you know, this is stuff that happened ages ago. Her father told her at that point in time, hey, we need to continue to pursue this, because there are going to be other girls who will benefit from this. You're not going to benefit from it, but you need to think past that, which it's an amazing thing for a dad to say.
It's a good thing he did.
It's a good thing he did. And so now Maria, they had the tournament last September. They held it again last weekend in Hoboken. And they had the mayor of Hoboken out, who seems like he'd be just a great guy to go have a beer with. Big Yankee fan out there on a Saturday morning, leading opening ceremonies, just seems like a cool dude. And Maria's out there, and Maria can't take the mic without bursting into tears. Because you think about it, she didn't have the opportunity on, for all intents and purposes, those same fields, or the opportunity had been taken away. And now all she sees are girls out there who are playing. And just a moving experience for the girls to be able to see her and talk to her. And also great for the girls to realize that, hey, there are girls all over the country who are like me, who love this game, who want to play it. And for me, it really, I've been at baseball and softball fields literally every day since March, I feel like. Like, I don't know that there has been a day that I haven't stepped foot on some kind of a diamond or turf in over 3 months. And, like, my kid who plays baseball loves playing baseball as a sport. She loves playing softball as a sport, too. But there's a different camaraderie among 12 girls in a dugout than there is among 11 boys and a girl in a dugout. And now you take the great thing about the game of baseball for a girl, and you combine that with getting to play with a bunch of girls. And it really, for a lot of these girls who don't have the opportunity to do this all the time, it becomes a really fun experience. And, you know, they'll sit there and text back and forth after the fact, and Snapchat, and what, like all the stuff that
InstaChat,
teenage girls, snap face, all the stuff that teenage girls do in 2019. But it really is a lot of fun to see. And you know, I'm sitting out there, just the bizarre experiences that you have. Like, So Beth Greenwood, who's from Amherst, who played at Sauhegan, was one of the top 40 on the United States women's national team list and was invited to try out for the team last year. Didn't make it, but she should. And she's talented athlete, ambassador for the game. The best example I can ever think of pay it forward. Like, she's one town over, and I'm, you know, we're constantly, hey, do you and Maggie, you know, would Maggie want to come hit? Like, it's just, she's always doing whatever she can to put her hand out to girls so that girls can get to the next level of the game. And these kids have the opportunity to interact with somebody like that. But I'm sitting there, Beth goes walking in front of me with a couple reporters. And that's the other thing that's bizarre about this. You could go to a travel baseball tournament and there's not a reporter to be found. You go to a girls baseball tournament and there are film crews and there are reporters. And so I'm watching Beth go down the line. The next thing I know, Beth comes back, the reporters come back. I'm watching Maggie go down the line with reporters. Like, wait a second. It's like my kid's getting media training.
Well, she's had that up here in New Hampshire with Roger Brown.
Yeah, I guess. But, you know, it's just, it's, hey, they have an opportunity to do some really cool stuff. So anyway, now that I've kind of waxed non-poetically about girls baseball for about 12 minutes, it was really a lot of fun to see. They have, you know, some really great ball players on that team who, like, if you were to close your eyes and just watch the game and not, and just imagine, hey, I'm just watching a Little League game, be a pretty solid game with some of the talent that's out there. And there are things that can be done to refine the talent a bit, but the level of play is getting better and better and better. So
how did the games look when you did open your eyes? How did they turn out?
So the Boston team, which is our regional team, the 18U Slammers lost in the finals. The 11U Slammers lost in the finals. They actually had a girl from Goffstown on their roster as well. And then the 13U Slammers won theirs. God, who did they beat? Well, they beat everybody. They beat the Quebec team. They beat the Washington, D.C. team. And they beat the team from New York twice. So while the Red Sox were struggling with the Yankees, the Slammers were crushing the Wonders.
That's a nice consolation right there.
Uh-huh. It was all right. So, yeah, but Baseball for All, great organization. The Boston Slammers, also another one. We will be in Rockford, Illinois, which, if you're a baseball fan or have seen A League of Their Own, there's a team. There was a team, the Rockford Peaches.
Right.
And so they will have the Baseball for All National Tournament at the end of this month out in Rockford, Illinois, at the stadium where the Peaches played, which is named Beyer Stadium, but I don't think it has anything to do with Jeff.
I don't think so.
No. But
I played in two or three of those stadiums out there.
In Rockford?
I think
was that Frontier League?
Yeah, in the Frontier League.
Okay.
Rockford, DuBois County, which I don't think has anything to do with Henry.
That's really funny, though. What are the odds? Yeah.
And then Evansville, Fosse Field.
Yes. So, the Otters?
The Otters.
Yeah. I don't know if they're still the Otters, but yeah.
I think they are. Last time I checked.
I don't know.
Never know. These things could change.
That was Frontier League, though. Yeah. At that point in time. Yeah. So, but anyway, a lot of fun to watch. If you haven't seen anything about Baseball for All, look them up. You can just Google it, or it's at baseballforall.com. But they're working on a lot of cool stuff, and Major League Baseball is very invested in this as well, which, hey, you never know. I think they've really sort of come to realize that if they can create a generation of fans that are new fans to the game, you keep the game strong. And if mom has a love of the game and can pass that on to the kids, hey, kids are still getting out and playing. That's what you want. You don't want people sitting inside doing nothing. So, but yeah. All right. So I guess as long as we're talking about baseball, do you want to talk about a 385-foot wall in London?
Yeah. I mean, so the first game I flipped on, I didn't know what the score was. I flipped on the game and it was 6-6 in the second inning. So I'd sort of missed the outburst there in the first inning of that one. And second game was when the Red Sox hit, what, three homers in the first?
Yeah, just bizarre.
Over towards right center, so they sort of just flew the ball over that 385. But both games were sold out. There was a lot of fun video of how they put the field together in that soccer stadium. And it was...
I wonder if they had to move soccer nets, though.
They had to move a lot of soccer stuff. They had to build the dugouts.
Soccer nets. Yep.
You know, bring in the foul poles from who knows where.
Yep.
The turf and all that. So it was neat to see that. But it seemed to be a big success with the two sellouts. And at first I thought, you know, why send the Red Sox and Yankees? But I actually think in hindsight it was a smart move to put those historical teams over there, and then they're going to follow it up with the Cubs Cardinals next year. And man, did they get a treat in terms of offensive output, which they must have thought they were watching American football. 17-13. That's a football score.
Oh, it's a football score. Well, the total in that game was 11.5, and they were over the total by the end of the first inning.
Right.
Like, and I wish I had looked at that because, yeah, a total like that in 11.5, everybody was already talking about how that fence was shallow. Like, the center field fence was shallow anyway. So, given those two teams, that wouldn't have been surprising at all. But
yeah, the only thing that balanced it out was the huge area of foul territory, you know, bigger than Oakland because of the shape and the dimensions of the stadium. So, you could think, well, maybe that'll balance it out a little bit. And certainly that's what the pitchers were excited about. And I would have loved to play in that. I loved drifting into foul territory to track down pop-ups. So, that would have been fun. But yeah, the, you know, home runs left and right, especially for those two teams who are pretty adept at it, even in bigger stadiums.
Right. That's why you like Chubbuck Field. You got all that room over there.
Yeah, it's just, no, it's just different in softball. You really don't get, you get like one pop-up a year like that you would get in baseball. You'd get it once a game where a right-handed hitter would pop it down the first baseline, sort of right in the middle of the first baseman and the right fielder. I mean, you get those all the time in baseball, but
yeah.
First of all, it's so much easier to pull the ball in slow pitch softball.
Yep. Second of all, you shouldn't be popping the ball up in slow pitch either.
And you almost never do it as a righty to that area of the field because it's really a poor swing to pop it up over there. You know, in baseball,
you haven't been watching, have you?
Watching what?
the BMSL.
No, I haven't been paying attention to where people hit it at all.
Poor swings. No, never, never. Why would you? You know, getting back to your point about the Red Sox and the Yankees, though, it makes perfect sense. Yeah, they're each giving up gates, and that's a critical thing. You don't want to be giving up gates if you're a home team because there's a lot of money at stake, but there's TV dollars there, and we all know that the TV dollars completely dwarf any gate revenue anyway. So there's TV dollars there, but there's also just the fact of it's, okay, if you were to throw out, for example, the Rays and the Diamondbacks, it's a way harder sell. But everybody knows who the Yankees are. Everybody know, and if you don't know who the Yankees are, you know the interlocking NY. And chances are, you know the B on the hat. Like, those two things, I'm not going to say they're like Nike or Adidas, but they're really well-known symbols. So just by virtue of that, it makes things much easier to get tickets sold when people have an idea of what the product is, and you're already, I was talking about it with Brian Williams, who I used to work with in Kansas City. Brian was a master promoter, and we worked, of course, with Rick Montine, who we had on the show last year. Rick used to always talk about giving people a second sentence. Like, I went to the game and this. With this, you're giving people the second sentence in the game because it's, I went to the game to see the Red Sox and to see the Yankees. That's built into it immediately with the marquee players. So from a marketing standpoint, it made sense for baseball to go ahead and do that. The Cubs Cardinals, I think, are both relevant as well. The Cubs even more so. You know, I don't know that I see people going from the 314 to London for a baseball game, but there are going to be enough Cubs fans. I mean, I remember going to Dodger games as a kid, and it was, believe it or not, more Cubs fans than Dodger fans at Dodger Stadium in the summer. So who knows? We will, what'd you just pull up on your phone?
Well, I made a mistake. I mispronounced the field in Evansville, and I need to correct it. It's obviously Bossy Field.
Yeah.
And
not Ray Fosse Field.
Right.
I let you go.
Exactly.
I let you go.
Yeah. So the fun fact about it, if I haven't mentioned it on a previous show, is that it's the third oldest stadium in the U.S. in continuous use, behind only Fenway and Wrigley.
Really?
Yeah.
Where does Fitton Field down in Worcester fall into that?
I don't know.
I got to get that answer. Yeah, I'll get it eventually. Every time I drive by that, it's, you know, I sit there because that field has been around since about that time as well. But, you know, I don't have an answer for you. So I guess
There must be some other variable in there in terms of the rankings. I don't know if it has to have been some professional baseball played there.
So it's professional baseball is the rule.
I don't remember what the other variable is.
Okay.
But
yeah, that one I can't help you with.
That's the kind of category you want to be in as we talk about Red Sox, Yankees, Cubs, Cardinals, is to be with those fields in terms of history.
Yeah.
It's not too shabby.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, basically, that was big news of the year along with the Titanic sinking.
Right.
And that's how long ago it was, just for a frame of reference.
Yeah, so, 1912 to 1915.
So
that's the time period we're talking about.
And as we're looking through baseball, and this being truly, they talk about it, the year of the home run. Looks like there is a great lineup in the Home Run Derby next week. Excited for that just to see what will transpire. But one of the guys in that lineup has been red hot, Pittsburgh Pirate named Josh Bell, who I'm sure will be a Yankee by August. because why wouldn't they try to get everybody? But in the spirit of great scouts, back in March, an anonymous scout said to Sports Illustrated, Josh Bell can't play. He's not a good defender. He's a big lump. He has bad agility, bad footwork. He can't run. Supposedly, he's a big power threat, but he hit 12 home runs at first base. This is not a kid. This is his third year in the big leagues. I don't think he's got the ability to get better.
He's gotten better this year.
Yes.
You read off the numbers before the show.
He's hitting .308, on-base percentage .381, 25 bombs,
leading the league in total bases?
Yeah, leading the league in total bases, RBI, doubles. I don't know what else you would... He really seems like a lump.
I'm surprised that scout said it. I remember the first time I saw him swing, he was one of those guys that made me go, whoa, that's a good-looking swing.
He's got a great left-handed swing.
Yeah,
and,
big power guy.
Right, and sometimes it just doesn't materialize for you, and sometimes it does. And we've talked enough times about hard work and... particularly how it pertains to the NBA. You're not a finished product when you walk into that league, and you're not a finished product when a Major League Baseball team drafts you either. There's still a lot of work to be done to get to the major leagues. And when you're a guy who has talent and hard work, sometimes, particularly if you're playing in a market like Pittsburgh, sometimes you wind up called up before you should be. And it's a trial by fire in the major leagues, and you're really trying to figure out what's up. And sometimes it just takes a little bit of time to adjust. Now it seems like he's adjusted. He had 3 home runs last night. So
there's another lefty slugger in that contest who didn't come out of the gates with MVP type numbers, but he has them now, Christian Yelich. I wonder if there's many scouts along the way that questioned whether he would ever do anything.
It didn't seem that way. So
because man, does he have a pretty swing.
Yeah, Yelich was, I think, a pretty known commodity, and it's interesting too to look at some of the other names. One of the other names in there is Carlos Santana, who played the first, 8 years of his career with the Indians, had 1 year with the Phillies, and didn't... It's funny. You can look at the more conventional stats for Carlos Santana and go, yeah, he had about .230. But the guy walked 110 times, scored 82 runs, on-base percentage .352. He just finds a way to get on base. Goes back to the American League. Now he's hitting .293. On base over 40% of the time, and you go, hey, sometimes you change scenery and things don't go as well. Change scenery, went right back to Cleveland, and now all of a sudden he's doing it again. He'll be a fun one to watch in the Home Run Derby. And Santana is a guy who, a switch hitting power guy. And then you got a guy who played here last year who's in the Derby too, Vlad Guerrero. So.
And another guy we saw play against him last year, Pete Alonso.
Yeah.
For the Mets.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah. And Alonso, it's funny. You look at how much the game has changed. So thinking back to Daryl Strawberry and what a phenom he was back in the 80s, he was the Mets rookie record holder for home runs in a season.
In a season.
Alonso already broke that.
Before the All-Star break.
And, you talk about it when you're... If you're coaching or watching a game, you don't want to see a guy get cheated. You don't want the check swing that turns into a little squibber. Pete Alonso doesn't get cheated.
No, he doesn't.
He
strong guy
out of his shoes.
He gets after it. And for him, I can kind of understand, he's a young player, and so he's sort of surprising people a little bit with his big numbers. but he's almost at 30 home runs. Yelich is at 30. I can't figure out why teams are still pitching to him. How can you pitch to Yelich enough to allow him to hit 30 homers before the All-Star break?
Yeah. No. I mean, and it's they have a good lineup. There's a lot of power in that lineup. Speaking of, I guess, as long as we're talking about Pete Alonso and Binghamton, his most notable teammate.
Jeff McNeil or Tim Tebow?
Tim Tebow. Not doing so well.
I haven't looked up his numbers.
I hadn't looked at his numbers now. Just guess what he's hitting.
205.
156.
Ouch.
Bad.
How many at-bats?
220 plate appearances, 199 at-bats.
That's a good sample size. That's the third of a season.
Yeah. I was really hoping that Tebow was going to sort of put something together and get himself at least a shot. It does not appear that this will be happening for Tebow.
That's unfortunate. It's sort of like he hit the wall because last year he was an all-star, Eastern League all-star, and he was playing well, but then he broke his hammock bone.
Yeah.
And that really derailed him. I mean, he was his numbers were much better last year. So tough that he had to miss a big chunk of the year last year and – you know, he's hit the wall a little bit.
Yeah, so tough for Tim Tebow, but we got the Home Run Derby coming up next week, as well as the MLB All-Star Game coming up next week. So always a fun time to see. I do miss the old days of pitchers throwing a couple three innings in that All-Star Game instead of just this one inning and you're out thing. But, you know, I don't think I'm going to get that back.
No, especially in this day and age with baseball where we see lots of trips to the mound every game.
Yeah.
You certainly see that more and more in the All-Star game as well.
It's a it's not a welcome change. The pace of play is something they got. That's one big change they need to figure out.
The folks in London got a taste of that.
Oh, 4 hours and 42 minutes for a 9-inning game.
Yeah.
That's obnoxious.
That's short.
That's
short and sweet.
Unwatchable.
I couldn't watch the entire game of either one. You know, you come in and spend an hour and a half, you watch two innings. You're like, okay, I got my fill.
It really makes, I don't know, do you go to the BMSL where everybody starts at a 1-1 count?
Games are over in an hour and 15 minutes.
Just saying. I mean, we used to do in the BMSL, it used to be full counts. 4 pitches to walk, 3 pitches to strike out.
Well, that's also known as one pitch.
Well, that's one pitch, you know, but now it's, all right, the game's cruising right by. So, I don't know, man. 4 hours and 42 minutes is not a good experience for a fan.
Not for 9 innings.
Not for 9 innings. It takes too long, past everybody's bedtime. And Major League Baseball knows it's a problem. They just, I don't know if they are powerless to fix it or...
It's hard to fix it.
It's hard to fix, yeah.
They're working on it.
Yeah. So I guess in the last baseball that we'll talk about, the College World Series is done. Vanderbilt, I don't know, Michigan was the Cinderella. Was like last team in, and somehow just kept rolling. And great team chemistry, some very good pitching. They had that lefty Tommy Henry on the mound who was dealing game in and game out. But unfortunately for Michigan, in order to win the College World Series, it starts on a Monday and it's a best 2 of 3. So they had their horse go on Monday, won the game with him, but then the cupboard was kind of bare at that point. And you can't, as much as you might want to say, hey, we're going to come back on one day rest and at least roll something out. It's one thing if you're paying a guy and he's Madison Bumgarner and you're trying to win a World Series. It's another thing if it's a college kid who hasn't been paid to do this professionally at all. So Michigan, who had used to that point after Henry pitched that first game, they'd used 3 pitchers in the entire College World Series, the entire time in Omaha. And now all of a sudden it was a guy after another guy after another guy, which doesn't it, you're for better or for worse, you're putting people into a situation they haven't been in before because you haven't needed them. But now it's at the most high leverage situation possible. And the guys, by and large, did well. But game two, did you watch game two?
No, I saw most of game three.
Okay.
Just bits and pieces of one and two.
Game two, for anybody who hasn't watched Kumar Rocker, just an absolute treat to watch him throw. And, you know, when you get a guy who's, I think he's either 18 or 19, throwing in the mid-90s and great slider, great changeup. I mean, he's major league ready.
He's a freshman, right?
And he's a freshman.
Yeah. Especially personality-wise, too. You and I talked about that post-game interview he had where really humble, despite his outstanding talent, just talking about the veterans, talking about the coach. So he's got the makeup that you just dream of.
Yeah, and he's been around it for some time, though. His dad's an SEC Hall of Famer, played his college football at Auburn and had 3 years in the NFL and has been an assistant coach at a variety of college programs. So it also helps when you have somebody who has been there, who is able to sort of guide you through it, because it really is challenging to, and we talked about it earlier as far as the media goes, it's challenging to speak to the media, and particularly when you haven't done it. And he looks like he's ready to roll, and Michigan, by and large, they really overperformed, and great to see it, and also neat to see the Vanderbilt coach and the Michigan coach had a lot of history with each other. And so while, you know, you're one guy's bummed out because he didn't win, but he's happy for his friend, and the other guy's the complete opposite side of the coin.
Right.
So that's really what you want to see. Michigan also, for years, college baseball has been a really largely homogeneous sport. It has been ethnically not terribly diverse, and the Michigan team has done a very good job of making their team as really it as Eric Backich put it, the Michigan head coach, we're trying to look like the United States of America. And he did so, and look at the benefits that it gave to him as far as the chemistry, as far as the way that the team supported each other. It was like, I'd watched, you watch these games as your super regionals and college World Series, and you're like, I wish I could go and be part of that team.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun to see different areas of baseball evolve and to see college baseball look a little bit more like minor league baseball. And it, again, like we talked about with the games over in London, you see the game go to a new frontier, whether it's women or minorities or a new country. It's exciting. And, you know, baseball in England has a long way to go to grow.
Yeah.
I still remember I was on a high school all-star team from New England that went to England. We played the British national team, just a bunch of 18-year-olds from New England, and we beat them. We beat the British national team, these adults, 25, 30 years old, because there just weren't that many good baseball players in the entire country.
Right.
That was 20 years ago. So after this series between the Yankees and Red Sox on their home soil, let's see what baseball is like in England in 20 years from now.
Right. It really, and this is something that people bring up, like at the Baseball for All tournaments, it does a lot of good for players, to young players who are watching a game, to look out at the field and see people who are aspirational to them and who they feel like, all right, I look like that person. And so if it's a girl out there on the field who's 18 years old, who's just dealing on the mound and is an absolute presence, and there were plenty of them down there. There's one from North Carolina who's made headlines for pitching on her high school team. And for other young girls to be able to watch that and say, if she can do it, there's no reason that I can't. So that is what things like the Michigan team can do, and what things like Baseball for All can do, and what the Sox and the Yankees going over to New England can do, or over to England. We're in New England. All of those things will help grow the game, because now all of a sudden people are looking at it and going, it's really not that much of a stretch for me to get there. And so who knows? We'll curious to see where all this goes in the next few years, because baseball needs a resurgence. And if it's able to capture other market segments, talking like a total marketing guy now, if it's able to capture other market segments and grow in those segments, now you're talking about a game that can really grow. They have problems they have to solve. The pace of play thing, there's no excuse ever why a game should take 4 hours and 42 minutes unless it's taking 19 innings. But there are things they have to solve, but they're on the right track for solving some other things, where it seems like baseball has ignored a lot of things that I guess for them have been on the fringes for years. Well, now they're really making a push to those things, and hopefully it's for the good of the game. So we will see. And I guess we're going to segue into something else, because we talked about England and the USA. How do you like that? Women's World Cup.
Yeah, so, well, it's noon on Tuesday.
Yes.
So that's 3 hours from now.
Yeah.
So we'll
I'm excited.
Yeah, well, we don't know who won.
No, we don't.
You're listening to this on Saturday. We don't know who won on Tuesday.
But I'm excited to watch it.
Yeah.
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 Anyway, keep going.
Well, I was ready to segue into a different sport.
Well, no, we'll get to basketball. Don't worry. But the the English team is not happy because they are describing the Americans as arrogant.
Well, they did win 13-0.
Yeah,
in this tournament,
and they're the defending champions. So I guess it's ours. Take it from us.
Right.
Applies.
The U.S. always at least goes to the semifinals, right?
Correct. So the English are describing the Americans as arrogant. Did you catch the whole thing about the hotels, though?
No.
So the American team went to they sent representatives to scout out the hotel where they would stay for the finals, as well as the hotel where they would stay if they were in the third place game.
Okay.
And the English team, I guess, was staying at the hotel where the Americans would stay if they were in the finals, and did not like the fact that American representatives were at that hotel when they're staying there. But really, if you're to me, that's
this is during the tournament?
Yes. To me, that's just good preparation.
It's terrific preparation.
If I'm going to be staying at a hotel, I want to know what I'm walking into. It's not like I'm spying on it and, throwing laxatives in the British team's tea, whatever. Yeah.
No,
here's some Miralax, guys.
No, that's the mentality I want for my team. We're expecting to go to the championship, so let's figure out what hotel we're going to be in. What I don't like is that they're checking out the hotel for the third place game. They shouldn't even be thinking about that.
You have to cover this
No, we're not going there. If we lose, fine. We will scramble and find some place to stay. We're not going to go scout out the third place game hotel.
I don't know, man. It's I guess those are the things that happen.
That should be a covert mission that nobody knows about.
Exactly. Well, I think they also made mention of the fact that they did because they wanted to seem less arrogant, perhaps. I don't know. But anyway, we'll see what happens. I'm excited to watch the game today. They play a great brand of soccer. And it's interesting. I don't know. It's weird because it makes me feel old, because I remember watching the teams back in the 90s. And the girls from the 90s are now, they weren't girls then. They were women then. But now they're women who are commentators, who are basically my age.
Right. Julie Foudy.
Yeah. And Brandi Chastain. And it makes me feel old. That's one thing. And now they're talking about the girls that in my head I look at and I'm like, oh, she's still young. She's still in her 20s. They're like, no, Carly Lloyd's 36. What? I didn't say that was okay. She's still supposed to be in her 20s.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see how the torch has passed over and over again with this group. And, by the time you're listening to the show,
They'll be in one of those two hotels.
They'll be in one of those two hotels, and the finals are Sunday. So if you're listening Sunday night, it's done, and we sound like a couple of rubes here.
That's the disclaimer.
Yeah, exactly. It's early. We don't have a crystal ball.
Right.
So I know, you've been sitting here politely for 40 minutes, and we haven't said the word NBA yet.
Well, I started to think about the segue when you're talking about marketing and MLB and spreading to new places. The NBA has figured that out. They have a tremendous marketing squad that over the years has really spread the word for the NBA. And in terms of role models, that's the other thought I had. Who are the champions that we just saw? Toronto, first championship for Canada in the NBA.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of that generation-to-generation role model thing that's going to be happening now, because back when the Raptors first came, you have these kids in Canada looking up to Vince Carter and deciding, oh, maybe it'll be cool to play basketball. Maybe there's something in the world other than hockey that we can play. And he was the part of that generation to inspire Canada to really get into the NBA, get into basketball. And now that they've actually won it, Kawhi is their national hero. And it's just going to continue to take off in Canada. But again, it's Tuesday, so the biggest story of free agency, Kawhi Leonard, we don't know where he is yet. It's looking like Lakers, Clippers, or Toronto. Other than that, the big news, Sunday night was just incredible.
Right. I mean, that must have been the best day ever for you.
Oh, from 6 p.m. to really about 1 a.m., it was over $2 billion of contracts signed and Like,
I can't even, dude.
I don't even know what percentage of the NBA, like 15-20% of the players went to new teams or re-signed. It was just a massive race of, you know, who can we get? And all right, if we're going to sign this guy, maybe we can sign and trade. And that was really probably the biggest news, was that Jimmy Butler decided to go to Miami and they had to work out a sign and trade. And then Durant, no big surprise, decides to go to Brooklyn with Kyrie, and they decide, Golden State decides, all right, well, let's try and get something for him. So they do a sign and trade with Brooklyn to get D'Angelo Russell. But just so many big moves. And the takeaway for me, the first big takeaway, is that at this point, without knowing where Kawhi goes, the NBA actually is becoming the NFL in terms of parity for the first time in a long time.
Yeah, it's because, well, all these marquee guys are now looking at it like, I need to go somewhere and create a legacy, because they've seen Kawhi do it. And I don't know anything about revenues to sharing or TV deals or anything like that, but it appears that the revenue is flattened out enough among the teams that you have the ability, the teams have the ability to cover the salaries of whoever they want, provided that they just don't blow the salary cap out of the water.
Yes, they do. The salary rules are enough in line with the NFL. I'd say they're between the NFL and Major League Baseball, because there is such a thing as a hard cap in the NBA.
Right.
So you can go over the salary cap, then you hit the luxury tax. So you can spend more on your own free agents to get an advantage. But it is a little bit more like the NFL in that there are limits. You know, if Golden State had convinced Durant to stay, then they could have had another year or years of Curry, Clay, Durant, and Draymond, but they would have had a bunch of minimum players around them. So there are limits to it.
Yeah, I mean, there are limits to it, but you have ample opportunity to create a super team, which I guess brings me to my next question. Where do you want Kawhi to go?
I'd like to see him go to the Clippers. Because I think it would be a fascinating storyline for years to come of, can he get a championship to the Clippers so that they have their first in the same building as LeBron and Anthony Davis? I think that'll be more intriguing than, will anybody be able to beat the Lakers with Anthony Davis, LeBron, and Kawhi, you know, three of the top players in the NBA? I think that would be more exciting. And again, it goes back to this parity thing, because just imagine if Kawhi goes to the Clippers, then who are you going to pick in each conference to go to the finals? I mean, let's start with the West. So Kawhi and the Clippers, they're obviously a contender. LeBron and Anthony Davis on the Lakers, they're a contender. You can't forget about Golden State. How about Houston? Denver was a one or two seed the entire season. They're up and coming. Portland was in the conference finals. Utah may have had the best free agent season so far of any team. I mean, right now, without Kawhi making his decision, Utah might be the favorite to come out of the West. So, the West is just incredibly deep. How about in the East? The Bucks re-signed most of their players. They don't have Brogdon anymore, which is a big loss. But the Bucks certainly can be in the mix. Toronto, we won't know until Kawhi decides. The Celtics were a top-five team. Sixers were a top-five team. Indiana Pacers were a top-five team. All of those teams are still going to be in the mix, and I don't think there's a clear-cut favorite. I mean, maybe you say Milwaukee's the favorite, but any of the top five teams from last year, I think, could win this year. So, I mean, it's just going to be wide open for the first time in years. I mean, it was 4 years in a row we had Golden State-Cleveland, and there was the only threat to Golden State in the last 5 years has been Houston. But now, the way things are shaping up, Golden State and Houston, neither one of them would even be favored to get back to the Western Conference Finals, let alone the NBA Finals.
No. So my hope as far as Kawhi goes, I guess I'm going to rank them in order. One is Toronto. And I think there's a fit there with him and personality, and also the fact that basically he'd be pocketing an additional $39 million. You can go back to California anytime you want if you got $39 million in your pocket. So that's one thing. I think there is a fit for him there, and I think there's a mutual love that I don't want to see go away. I, when I was in Jersey this weekend, I walked up because there was a there were a couple teams from Canada that were down playing in the tournament, and there was a lady wearing a shirt that said Leonard and Lowry and Siakam and Ibaka and I don't remember the fifth one was, and then and Drake.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it looked like a Cards Against Humanity card, just names, black shirt, white lettering, white Helvetica lettering. And, you know, I went up and started talking to her and congratulated her and all that. And she found out where I was from and immediately got territorial, like not in a bad way, uh-huh. like not. And I didn't say I said I grew up in Southern California
uh-huh.
and I was a Lakers fan. And she kind of just drew back like.
So you're like, the one who's coming to recruit Kawhi like, along with everybody else.
Don't take my guy.
Right.
It, you know, you think about. So the Raptors would be, as far as a basketball fan, that would be my top place for him to go. The second place would be the Clippers, just because of the long-suffering franchise, to your point. I really don't think it's funny. Like when Chris Paul was getting traded to the Lakers a few years ago, and David Stern
allegedly
stood up and said, this is not a fair trade for competitive balance. And this trade isn't going through. To me, putting Kawhi on the Lakers or allowing Kawhi to sign with the Lakers is the same thing, if not worse.
It's worse in the sense that Kawhi is a better player than Chris Paul, and it will create three superstars like we've probably never seen before in the NBA. It's worse in that sense. I don't think it's 100% slam dunk that they would win because they only have Kyle Kuzma on the roster. They don't have anybody else. They have to, you know, find a bunch of young players that are playing on the minimum or veterans who will take it, which you start to hear rumors lately about, you know, maybe they would actually be able to do that. Maybe Rondo will take the minimum. Maybe guys like Kyle Korver, who's certainly a threat off the bench, will come and do it. Maybe Iguodala, who just got traded to Memphis, if he gets bought out, maybe he would go to the Lakers on a minimum contract. So then all of a sudden, if you start getting these veterans with big playoff and championship experience to come play there with them.
But even that's not a sure thing, though. Like,
it's not a sure thing.
Look at the Lakers back in the 90s when all of a sudden it was Richmond, Payton, Malone, and they couldn't pull off a title then.
Yeah, I mean, the difference there, I think, is that the veterans, you know, some of those veterans were really on the downside of their career. And, you know, the three biggest stars for the Lakers are still really in their prime. And but, you know, the wild card for the Lakers is the injury. You know, all those guys have had injury issues to deal with. So, you know, I agree. I would rather see him somewhere else for parity, but I don't think it's a slam dunk if he goes there because we have to figure out who they're going to have on the team. The other thing, again, I want to talk about is the Celtics on the other side. I don't think it's a slam dunk that this is rebuilding year where they're not a threat to win it.
No, I think I think there is an addition by subtraction element of not having Kyrie on the team anymore.
Right.
And just not having him there, for whatever reason, we talked about it a couple weeks ago. He's not a one.
Right.
He is not Batman. He is Robin. And some guys fit well into that Robin role. Dwayne Wade, to me, was the perfect sidekick for
yes.
years, which is what made him so beloved. Because he took the sidekick role, and if he needed to take a game over, you bet Dwayne Wade could have taken a game over. But I'm not going to say he was devoid of ego, because in order to get to that level, you have to have an ego. You have to have an edge. But Dwayne Wade didn't need to be LeBron. Dwayne Wade was fine being D. Wade. And I think Kyrie, unfortunately for him, and I think it's a career limiting thing. I'm not saying I think he'll be a Hall of Famer when all is said and done, but I think it'll be a career-limiting thing for Kyrie that he doesn't just say, okay, I'm okay being the sidekick guy to the big guy.
Right, and that's what he was in Cleveland, and he forced his way out. It's like if Dwayne Wade had said, all right, we won a championship or two, I'm going to leave Miami while LeBron is still here. You know, D-Wade had the maturity to say, you know what, I'm going to sacrifice that along with Bosch. Because I want to stay here and keep this thing rolling.
And sometimes it's nice when you're not in the spotlight.
Yeah, it makes it a little bit easier when all that attention is on that other player, and you have more freedom on the court.
You're more freedom
alone
on the
with
court,
the media,
and in life.
Else. Yeah,
and everything that guy does is being scrutinized, and you're just kind of hanging out in the in the shadows. Like, I mean, it's, I don't know. So I don't know if Kyrie gets to a point where he decides that, okay, I can work with whoever, he'll be fine. The other piece, and we talked about it, 4 weeks ago or so, when we were talking in the context of knowing your boss and knowing who you're going to work for, apparently that topic of doing research on the company that you're going to go to work for wasn't lost on the NBA free agents.
Yeah, right. Apparently, as Durant and Kyrie looked at the situation in New York, and they had initially had their focus on the Garden, the Mecca, they started to see some of these things that were happening with James Dolan, leadership, infrastructure. Then you start to look at the young players, and I think it was that the Knicks finished with 17 wins and Brooklyn finished with 42. And they looked at that and they said, you know what? Let's go to Brooklyn instead. It's a much better atmosphere. The ownership, the front office is much more positive. They're making really smart moves. They've got these exciting young players. Let's go there. We don't have to do everything ourselves if we go to Brooklyn. So I'm not surprised at all that that's what they went with.
Right. I'm not surprised at all. I mean, you're still in that major market. And where, I don't know, 15 years ago, you would have looked at the Lakers and the Clippers. The Lakers are to the Knicks as the Clippers are to the Nets. It's not like that anymore. The Nets have done a good job in the last few years of kind of fortifying things a little bit, building a core of players. The Knicks have just consistently been awful.
Yeah.
Whether it's bad free agent signings, bad ownership, bad everything. So I'm really curious to see where all of this leads us. And again, we talked about it. I mean, we're 80 shows in, give or take. We've talked about this stuff before. The NBA has done such a good job of allowing its players to be players, and to that it's okay to have a personality, and it's okay to post things on social media and chat among each other, like, and create little rivalries. Like, they've made this completely okay, and really the players are doing the marketing for the league, which is awesome. But the season's done, and what are we sitting here talking about? The NBA, because the free agent season is so good.
Oh, it's like never before good. And then you talk about filling out a roster, and you talk about the NBA staying in the forefront of our minds throughout the summer, and we transition right into Summer League, which started last night. Not the Vegas Summer League, but the Summer League in Sacramento and the Summer League in Utah. And there are a couple of fun stories that connect to New England that we saw last night. New Hampshire man, Wenyen Gabriel. Okay, remember him? So he's back on the scene with Sacramento. Last year he was in the G League, got an injury, but he scored 10 points, 6 rebounds a game. But now he's in that second professional year, and in the first Summer League game last night, Gabriel had 22 points, 12 rebounds, 2 steals. He was the best big man on the court in a game between Sacramento and Golden State. A lot of fun to watch him. And who was he guarding and vice versa? The guy we talked about from Villanova, who's really the heir apparent to Draymond Green in Golden State, Eric Paschal.
Yep.
So it was fun to see that matchup. And then when you think about Golden State and you hear about their big roster numbers, the salary cap, luxury tax, how are they going to fill out the roster around those 4 big stars? And you start to think about these guys we've talked about, like Eric Paschal, another guy that the Golden State has on their summer league team, Jimmer Fredette. So that's going to be a lot of fun to watch, to see if he's the guy coming off the bench for Golden State.
Yeah.
To light it up. I mean, that was really a big what they were missing in the playoffs this year. They didn't have anybody to come out off the bench consistently and score. When Clay went down, Durant went down, it was Quinn Cook, Sean Livingston. I mean, do any of these guys put – I mean, Quinn Cook had that one game where he made like 3 threes against Toronto, and that was the story of the night because they actually got something off the bench.
Yeah.
Imagine how fun that'll be if Jimmer's coming out and shooting 7 or 8 threes a game. Them.
What are they going to do on defense if he's out there, though?
Yeah, he tries. That's his biggest weakness for sure. But
who's your best analog to Jimmer Fredette in the NBA? I'm sitting here puzzling over it, and I'm not going with any obvious answer, and I'm just stymied.
Yeah.
He's like a Craig Hodges.
Yeah, I guess you could. I mean, the I don't have a great analog. The first guy that comes to mind is Jamal Crawford.
Okay, I like that.
Just a guy who's going to come off as the sixth man, and his job is just to score.
Just,
I mean,
okay,
you
so you're
shoot
going
it every time, like, shoot it every time, Jamal, and we're happy.
To go it even further back, then it would be like Elliot Perry or Vinnie Johnson.
Yeah, Vinnie Johnson. The only thing, though, is Jimmer does create. I mean, he's a good...
Vinnie Johnson created back in the day for the Pistons. Like, that was, hey, we're changing up the game, and we're getting rid of the, like, Lane Beeren, Mahorn, and Jeff Ruland are out for a little bit. Yeah. Now we need points
right.
instead of elbows.
Right.
You know, so, yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting. I would love to see the guy find a way, and it really seems like that would be a good place for him.
Oh, yeah. Perfect fit. So I think that'll work out well if he gets the call-up. Another exciting shooter that we talked about, Tyler Hero, who Miami took at 13. Celtics couldn't get him at 14. His first game in Summer League last night for Miami, he had 18 points, hit 5 threes. They let him play point guard. He really was more of a shooting guard at Kentucky, but they're trying to find out if he can be a point guard. So he played well, and the other good player in that game for Miami was Duncan Robinson, who was born in Maine, went to Phillips Exeter, is now his second year as a pro. He had 17 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists. So a nice little New England connection. And then the thing about...
Basketball hotbed.
Yeah,
New England.
Well, that's the thing. You don't think about it, really, as the hotbed. But I started doing some research on Eric Paschal.
Yep.
As well as the guy who stood out to me for Memphis last night, Yuta Watanabe, Japanese player. His name means the chosen one.
How do you spell his first name?
Y-U-T-A.
Okay.
So he's a 6'9" lefty. He surprised me that he's from Japan, but he went to prep school in Connecticut. He went to this prep school called St. Thomas More Prep.
Yeah.
And maybe you've heard of it.
Driven by it.
Okay.
Seen the signs, yeah.
Do you know what, speaking of basketball hotbeds, do you know their basketball history?
No, God, no.
Well, they've produced multiple NBA players. Their coach is in the Hall of Fame, the Naismith Hall of Fame. He's been there over 30 years. He sent hundreds of players to play professionally around the world. So this guy, Yuta Watanabe, the Japanese player, and Eric Paschal both graduated from that team in 2014. So
I'm trying to figure out why my shirt sleeve is torn.
So just a surprise to learn about this St. Thomas More Prep. Another graduate of that program is Andre Drummond. So they're churning out some legit players.
Right. Well, and we keep getting told go up to the Lakes region.
To see Brewster Academy.
Yeah. Yeah.
This year, St. Thomas More played Brewster Academy. Do you know where they played their game? The Barclays Center.
Huh, really?
Yeah.
That's funny.
So these are some legit programs with legit players right here in our backyard.
There you go. And speaking of the Barclays Center, when Jay-Z bought in as a part owner of the Nets in 2004, $1 million he paid. When he sold his share in the Nets, he got... 9 years later, $2.35 million, which is pocket change to Jay-Z, but I'm just saying.
Good return.
Yeah, it's a nice, solid ROI for the man. All right. With that said, no guests on the show today, so we're not thanking them, but thank you to Harry Kozlowski for always doing such great work for us, as well as Colleen Richardson and Bill Jennings. And thank you to my co-host, Andrew Hansen. Have a great 4th of July. Stay safe. And... great sports week, too. I was going to say don't do anything I wouldn't do, but that would take all the fun out of it. So, yeah, do whatever you want for 4th of July.
See you next time.
Happy birthday, America. You've been listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1.